I'm not proposing to precede the entire report, but I'm going to talk a little bit in terms of an update, specifically an update to the whole paywall discussion, paid content discussion on the consumer side of the market, which is where I think the really interesting issues lie and where we simply don't know what is going to happen over the next year or two. Six paid content models we identified in the report: total lockdown, where all content is behind some kind of pay barrier; metered access, the kind of system that the FT runs and that the New York Times and perhaps the Telegraph also will soon shortly be running; freemium content, where certain types of freemium paywall, where certain types of content sit behind barrier, other types of content are freely available; time-limited paid access, news information which is older, having less value, and therefore being made free-to-air; contemporaneous material being kept behind the pay barrier; site licensing and pay-per-view, including micropayments. Those are the six paid content models we discussed in the report. I want to talk a little bit about, in many ways, what I think is the most intriguing of the experiments currently running, News International's efforts around the Times and the Sunday Times. You'll be familiar with the timetable. In July 2010, we saw the introduction of paywalls around the news sites. News of the World followed in October 2010. Some interesting questions that have yet to be answered, I think, in the public realm about the progress of this experiment. Marketing costs, cost of acquisition for each of those customers, each of those readers, the kind of traffic reduction implicit in a total lockdown environment, really quite drastic. What does that do to one's advertising model? Social interaction, I'll talk a little bit about that because, of course, clearly, luckily, the Times and Sunday Times are trying to develop ways of socially marketing these sites to potential subscribers, which is interesting. The unique ad sales challenge, I think, that I referred to slightly a minute ago, what Clay Shirky describes as a newsletter model at the Times and the Sunday Times. Well, this is a rather negative description of what's occurring there. Nevertheless, what we're looking at is an audience that is really quite deep, on which information is really quite deep. An audience that's extremely focused. Now, what kind of progress are we seeing in terms of News International's ability to sell that audience to an agency community that is very much fixated, I think, on big numbers? And clearly, of course, as we know, there is still no plan B. So the metrics, this is the News International statement that emerged in November of last year. 100,000 print subscribers activated web access. That's pretty straightforward. People who receive the print edition get free web access and visited the site and activated the subscriptions. We then had, of course, in a statement that was criticized for being somewhat opaque, the reference to 105,000 paid for customer sales. That's not subscribers, because some of that 105,000 were, of course, single digital copy or pay-as-you-go web subscribers. So we've got, if you like, 105,000 payment incidents, some of which, of course, may be repeated daily payments coming through the system. And around the time that this data was released, Katie Bannick of News International talked to the media, and a series of what I describe as unofficial metrics emerged. Clearly, News International are very keen on talking up the quality of this audience. Multi-channel subscription reach up by 40% July to November. I'm not quite sure how we define multi-channel subscription reach. I've got a vague idea. I suspect that the Times on its own, as I understand it, has around about 110,000 print subscribers currently. Lots of frequency. Lots of interaction with the sites on the part of visitors and app users. The Guardian did its own analysis using data from Experian Hipwise and calculated that in September 2010, Times and Sunday Times had 54,000 users a month going behind the paywall. 28,000 of those print subscribers, 26,000 specifically paying for digital content. I mean, that looks similar in some ways to the information we had coming out of News International in November. One interesting point here, I think, is that the Guardian suggestion that a relatively high number of these digital-only subscribers are coming from outside the UK, whether we've got an expat audience or an international audience, what kind of audience we've got there. But, you know, up to 50% of those specifically paying for digital content coming from outside the UK. The UK audience demography is pretty much as you'd expect, male, 45 plus, concentrated in the southeast. This piece of analysis comes from Oliver and Obam. It's a pretty big survey sample, 2,700 respondents, conducted in November, not November 2012, because I said it wasn't there, but November 2010. This survey, as I understand it, really questions habitual readers of the Times newspaper about what they did when the paywall came down. And you can see 14% of them subscribed in some form. Now, I don't know about your reactions to that, but my reaction to that is that's a pretty significant number. Amongst non-Times readers, 0.6% subscribed in some form. Now, one of the much publicised aspects of News's paywall experiment has been the large decline in terms of traffic volumes hitting the front page, the homepage, every month, and this has been discussed ad nauseam. What is interesting to see, though, is that the number of UK uniques coming to Times and Sunday Times is moving upward at the moment. This data comes from Nielsen. So December to January, we've got an increase from 1.2 to 1.6 million. Now, on the same methodology from Nielsen, which is not ABCE methodology, clearly, the Telegraph has 4.3 million users coming to its homepage during January 2011. Now, this strikes me as a relatively large number coming into the Times and Sunday Times homepage, and it's increasing. If we suggest that the conversion rate might be something like 0.6%, we're looking at just under 10,000 new web subscribers per month, potentially. Very rough number. 0.6% is a relatively modest conversion rate. I have heard of conversion rates that are higher. So possibly 10,000 new subscribers coming in per month. I talk about social marketing. The Times' experiment with WordNerd has been well received in the Twitter sphere. It was also a rather canny piece of social marketing, I think. It strikes me that if you also look at somebody like Kate Moran, who has 66,000, nearly 70,000 followers on Twitter, versus the kind of audience that's paying to consume the Times and Sunday Times, 250,000, they're not entirely dissimilar numbers. What does this say to us about the power of individual journalists as brands versus the power of the brand that they work for? What does it say to us about the ability of Kate Moran's Twitter presence to encourage people to consume the Times and the Sunday Times? I'm not sure, but I think there's something in that argument. Advertising. Historically, News International has been extremely good at selling print advertising, and in the eyes of agencies at least those agency people polled by the IPA twice a year, not so good at selling digital advertising. Has there been a big change in the way that agencies perceive News International since the paywall came down? It's a question that's worth asking in the absence of any data about advertising revenues flowing in to the Times and the Sunday Times online. What we see is that most of the action in the market over the last year or so has been concentrated around the Guardian and the Telegraph. The Guardian improving, the Telegraph improving the way it's perceived by its agency people. The Guardian having some difficulties in this area. And actually, perceptions of News International amongst digital practitioners inside digital operations inside agencies really haven't moved that much. What does that tell us? Not tremendously much, but you know, in the absence of numbers, it's pretty much all we've got to go on. So the known unknowns in terms of News International. The sign-up figures revealed in November were pretty generally greeted with negatively, I think it's fair to say. The figures were opaque, and I suspect in some quarters they were therefore overinterpreted. What's the yardstick we want to use in terms of assessing the size of this audience? Is it millions or thousands? I think the point is that if we take the conversion rate I referred to, 0.6% earlier, apply it to the kind of traffic that certainly Nielsen suggests is coming in to the Times Sunday Times homepage, we're looking at around about perhaps £12 million in revenue per year if all of those subscribers are purely digital. Of course, it's more if print gets involved in the equation. Churn needs to be factored into that. As we heard this morning, churn 30%, 40%, not unknown at Aftonbladet. Plus, of course, renewals over time. Is there bundling with Sky to come? And of course, ad revenue, as I've said, which remains something of an unknown, and really could transform our view of the viability of this experiment of paid content. News from elsewhere, The Telegraph is expected to launch a paid content site. Paywall around the site September 2011. A metered approach with very generous allowances. One would expect that's 20-30 stories per month before the demands for money start. Telegraph is interesting. It has a very big print subscription base. 50%+ of its circulation goes out by subscription. The equivalent figure for the Times, I think, is about 20-25% perhaps. What this means is the Telegraph is a huge store of demographic information, and it's going to be, they're going to be, I suspect, in a relatively advantageous position in terms of advertising in this respect. What does the Telegraph's entry into the market mean for News International? It's double-edged. Conceivably, it could reinforce the idea of paying for content amongst consumers. Manny considered that Rupert Murdoch, in his effort to assemble a coalition of the willing, was trying to educate the market in precisely this way. But of course, there's also going to be competition for similar eyeballs. Male, 45 plus, Southeast. I mean, you know, there is going to be competition for eyeballs. The free-to-air part of the market. The Mail Online has signalled quite clearly what it intends to do, how it intends to move beyond its current base of 54 million uniques, according to ABCE. Two-thirds of that audience is already from beyond the UK. We've got a Los Angeles bureau opened up. We've got Mail Online, you know, self-consciously really describing itself as the world's second largest English-speaking news site after the New York Times. They're obviously looking forward to the New York Times going behind the paywall. India, BRICS. I mean, you know, there is potentially an empire, an English-speaking empire of celebrity news taking shape here. The downside, I think, for the Telegraph is its reliance on adverts in the US to sell the US inventory. DMGT, the story of DMGT for the last 2 decades has been about growth through B2B. Now, there is tremendous executive enthusiasm, I think, amongst the parts of the online operation for the Global Mail Online proposal. Is there board-level commitment? It's not quite clear whether that commitment is 110% yet. How will DMGT handle the investment? Will it spread its resources too thinly across its consumer businesses? How will shareholders react to the proposal that Mail Online really should become the world's largest news site? Certainly in the English-speaking world, remains to be seen. The Guardian. We've had some discussion about The Guardian this morning already. One can make calculations, actually, on the basis of the 40 million digital revenue budgeted for 2011 at GNM. That is excluding Auto Trader and the rest of it. That's news-related online revenues, including £5, 7, 8 million pounds worth of non-advertising revenues, soulmates and so on and so forth. One can take this level of revenue and extrapolate outwards. And if you do so, and if you assume, for example, you know, 10 years of 10% plus year-on-year growth in online display, you start to get to the point where the online display revenue stream at GNM can support a seven-day news operation for about £100 million pounds a year by 2020. Earlier, if growth is more rapid. Of course, it remains to be seen whether we get 10%, 5%, 15%, 20% growth year-on-year in online display. The Guardian, I think, is well placed to pursue and to continue to pursue a free-to-air strategy, if only because of the unique financial structure of the GMG and the Scott Trust. Guido Fawkes, as you may have seen, has become rather interested in the Guardian's use of hedge funds this week. What I call Mr. Marx's cash cushion, in the same way that Karl Marx was financed by Friedrich Engels. While Marx wrote books, Engels ran the dark satanic mills of capitalism up north and financed Marx's writing. In the same way, the Guardian Media Group's investments have the potential to bankroll the Guardian into the free-to-air future. I think it's a very disciplined in operation there from the Guardian's commercial rivals. So the question is, confronting the Guardian, and it's an interesting one, will the Guardian intensify its free-to-air investment? It can do with doing so. Or will it too decide to introduce charging for certain parts of its content? I suspect it should probably pursue the formal course and continue along the free-to-air direction. So to summarise, actually what's happening amongst national newspapers is very, very different, actually, from what was occurring in 2003, 2004, when we did have, in the wake of the dot-com crash, a pretty concerted move to try to generate revenue from content. It seemed, for those of us around at the time, fairly concerted, but it's nowhere near as serious as the effort that's going on now. And I think what's positive about what's happening now is that we have a range of models. Lockdown, freemium, free. We've also got app-based paid content as well. We have a variety of platforms. We have competition between Google and Apple. News Corporation has purchased Skiff from Hearst. And although we don't hear an awful lot about it, Skiff remains a kind of pretty big storehouse of paid content platform technologies. Frequency. In terms of our ability, the increasing ability of consumer publishers to charge for per article, micropayments, time limited, weekly, monthly, annually, the flexibility is all there. And I think all of this bodes relatively well for the experiments. The contextual differences are big this time around too. If you look at the data and you look beyond our rather insular view of the newspaper market in this country, nearly half of European national newspapers are offering some form of paid online content. Okay, some of that may not be general news behind a paywall, but it's still a relatively high figure, I think. In terms of paid content and B2B markets, we've seen rapid decline in some sectors. In terms of classified advertising, the rise of data and workflow approaches, all of which I think bode relatively well to starting to charge for content. In consumer, we've seen some investment in value added. It'd be rather interesting to see what the Telegraph emerges with in terms of its Times Plus style offering for readers. And the point here, of course, is that online display can, I'm convinced, underwrite a digital future for some, but not all of the national media. And what appears to be emerging here, hopefully, is a rather more diversified ecosystem of approaches to revenue generation amongst national newspapers than the formerly kind of monocultural approach to online display only, which we've had for the past decade or more. Thank you very much.
feedback for the last session.